I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind. I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind.
Yeah.
This podcast trained me to be an assassin, Nick, but that's not who I am. No, all I ever wanted was a normal podcast. I thought I could change my mind and start anew, but I never could escape the shadow of this podcast. I am Wesley Sykes, and through the other side of the ether is the Razor Fist to my death dealer, Mr. Nicholas J. Eskfryer, valet for hire.
That's the best one. I can take valet for hire. I like that. Razor Fist is an amazing... you know what? We may have to someday do an episode where we go through all the best like side character names in the MCU, because you have Razor Fist and Taserface.
That's immediately what I thought of, those two names. That was my A-B thought process right there. I agree.
That may be only it, and that's not exactly a podcast, but we can work on that at some point.
Well, we got two down. I think if we get at least four more, that's a podcast. That's a six-pack, right? So we can at least do a goose juicy six-pack there.
Well, I think they've proven those don't last, so maybe we're wrong.
Yeah, we'll bring it back, though. Retro, like bell-bottom jeans.
Yeah.
And of course, this week we're going to be reviewing the 25th installment, if I'm not mistaken, here, into the MCU. Of course, the second installment of MCU's Phase 4, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, Nick. But before that, tell me, what's it like being a certified lover boy these days?
I just saw that he called out Steph Curry's wife in this whole thing, I guess.
I think he complimented her.
Okay, is that what it was? All right. Like, no, I'm sorry, I didn't even call that.
He named her, but he was saying to like all the other single ladies out there, like, you can't be a wife up like Ayesha Curry. Like, you're not as legit of a wife as Ayesha Curry. At least that's how I interpret it.
Oh, okay. I didn't listen to it. Did you did you like it?
The album is a little bit different. You know, a lot of people would like to compare this with Kanye West's album, of course, coming off maybe like a week difference in releases and whatnot. But I think they're two different albums. So, you know, and I think if you do find yourself comparing the two and saying who is better, who's a better rapper, who has a better album, you are falling into the marketing trap set by both of these artists. If you go back to like years ago, I think this was during the graduation album release for Kanye. He had like a similar bet with 50 Cent at the time, like the other biggest artist in the industry, about who would have more record sales when they've released their album. They lined up their release dates at the same time and stuff like that. So this is a big marketing ploy to drum up speculation and internet fodder and all that stuff.
You know, I know with PCP, when they like actually do shows, they do a lot of conversations about music, and I do enjoy those conversations. But one thing that they do well is I don't feel like they go too far into like saying this is better than that. Like, I understand they've had drafts and stuff, but when you talk about like saying one artist is better than the other, like, I know these guys are of the same genre, but it's still like they're very, very different. I don't understand that conversation at all. The music.
The rap community is very much like the sports community, and they're always talking about the MJ LeBron type debate and that sort of thing. So I think that's where the similarities kind of draw from. But what I'm interested in, and we need to talk to our guy Billy D about this, is getting a picture of you, Nick Fryer, kind of holding your belly like the pregnant woman. Because I don't know if you've seen the cover, but it's all the different color emojis of the pregnant woman is his album cover for the Certified Lover Boy. And it's kind of got like the Andy Warhol kind of chromatic type of vibe to it. So what I think we need is a picture of you in like emoji form kind of holding your belly, and make that a shirt. Hashtag Certified Lover Boy.
Okay. You want to do that with me? Okay.
Something like that. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Okay. You, Billy, you know, maybe Billy. Billy's a single guy. I forget that.
Maybe Mac.
You're not the single. Or Mac. I think Mac would be a great one.
Mac was the one that jumped out to me. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a great idea in general. We absolutely should do something with that. My last thing, though, when we were talking about when you're waiting for Kanye to come out, right? There was the issues of like other artists dropping stuff. Was it Drake and was it Kendrick Lamar? Were those the two guys?
So people, yeah. So it was definitely Drake. They knew that this album was going to be coming out by the end of the summer, but there wasn't an exact date. Of course, there's been some sort of beef, whether it's real or fabricated, once again between Drake and Kanye. So they were saying, you know, whatever about trying to go head to head with that. And then I think people were saying, because again, Kendrick is the other big rapper who hasn't dropped an album in a while. J. Cole just did one in the summertime, earlier this summer. It's like, wouldn't it be great if he just kind of kinged everybody and dropped like an unannounced album and just kind of, you know, like dropped the Trump card on everybody.
Right. Okay. So
but that hasn't happened yet. So I don't know. He has a single out. I don't know if it's like talked about that that he's having a new album.
So that's more speculation. Okay. Got it.
That's talking hip hop. You know, we're up to my shin right now. So if you want to get to the knee deep, follow my rap blog. No, I don't.
You got to think of a name for that if you're going to do that. You always come up with a name for that. Come on.
Wiggity, 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 Wesley Sykes. How's that?
There you go. All right. So on that note, it's time for trending now.
Yes. I don't really know how to rebound from that one. Marvel's What If, episode number 4, What If Doctor Strange Lost His Heart and Not His Hands, Nick? What'd you think?
So I thought it was solid. I didn't think I don't know where I rank it on the four episodes we've gotten so far. It's definitely not my favorite. Like I didn't I know my top two so far. I'm not sure which goes. Actually, no. I go the Avengers one. I go Black Panther and then / Star-Lord. And then from there, it's like I think I'm going to go Agent Carter and then I go Doctor Strange. I could go either way, though. I might need to rewatch. I'm going to rewatch this before we do our episode on it for sure.
See, you're kind of in the same boat as Goo was. I'm this is slightly better than the T'Challa Star-Lord episode for me. I still agree the Avengers one, What If They Never Formed, was my favorite one to date.
Yeah.
But this one is kind of in that same second tier with the T'Challa one. I gave this one a 79, excuse me. The T'Challa Star-Lord one is 78, so kind of around there. But I think the implications for this has a far greater outreach than any other episode that we've had to the date. So I'm interested with that, with the Doctor Strange aspects, two Doctor Stranges, the interesting release date of that with and kind of coordination with the No Way Home trailer that was out there with the idea of multiple Spider-Man. So I think that's kind of something that they're trying to kind of like soften us up and kind of get us used to.
You know, Wes, that in that lens, I think it deserves a better grade than you gave it. And it's your apps, but because I think you're right. I think that's a great call. Like your analysis is on point. Like that of all the ones we've gotten so far, that is the one where it's probably this could have the greatest implications. And actually, I think I was talking to my brother about this with the T'Challa one. Like that has said, or maybe it was Doc. I think, I don't know. Anyways, there was like the T'Challa one that set up for a world where you don't have T'Challa as the Black Panther. So whoever's the Black Panther from that world, maybe Michael B. Jordan, then we can get that one as well. So that's like another one where they kind of set it up. But the Doctor Strange one is the most obvious one of them. So that makes perfect sense. Good call.
Yeah. And it also is discussing this idea of the absolute point in time, which is something that we haven't gotten introduced on the live action MCU timeline. Mm-hmm. We have the Nexus point in time, right? Which I think is kind of adjacent to this, but it's effectively unchangeable, unmovable. And without the death of Christine Palmer, which is the absolute point in time, which I found to be pretty emotional, seeing to see them going back despite being animated, I think it still kind of hits you in the feels a little bit. Mm. Strange would never become the Sorcerer Supreme and be the person that he is. And I think that has an interesting tie into the events of the Soul Stone, right? You have Gamora and Black Widow. And is that something that you can't reverse back, because then you never stop Thanos without those events kind of happening?
Yeah.
No matter what happens in the timeline, right?
Yeah.
Or what timeline you're on.
That is a good point. They did. Yeah. So maybe, so then this probably is definitely, I think this conversation alone has definitively moved that one ahead of the Captain Carter one for me. So this is probably third on my list.
Yeah. But I will say though, there's speculation and theory going around about the Multiverse of Madness that not only is this dark Doctor Strange going to appear, but also Captain Carter as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's going to be, again, another important aspect to it.
That was another one too. Like you could easily go and bring her in now and all this too. If she's, you know, we haven't seen her in a while, so who knows, maybe she's getting like, you know, extra jacked so she can play this role.
Yeah.
Good work. I'd be here for it.
Get her on the HGH cycle of Chris Hemsworth and Chris Evans and Chris Pratt. Get them on the Chris HGH cycles. That's what I want to see.
This conversation has turned this episode into like an absolute game changer for this series, I think. Because now
it was slow moving though. Because that was Goo's, little problem with it. And I tend to agree. I did love the, although I'm not crazy about the animation. I love the stills and like the landscape shots, particularly in this episode, I really like. But Goo, again, my other podcasting partner, had this theory early on when we started the Captain Carter episode, was that is that the first domino to fall in this what if thing? Like if because of the events that they went so far back in time that all these different events start to happen. And I wonder if that comes back into play with this episode, because it seems like the events of this overwrites the events of the live action Doctor Strange. We see it's almost similar, but instead they're in a relationship already. He's a little bit more nicer and all that. And it, is that Doctor Strange from the animated version overwriting the events of the live action version? And that becomes now what we're dealing with in the future and going forward with the live action Doctor Strange movies.
I'm going to probably,
does that make sense?
I'm a little confused. I was about to say, when I re-listen to the show, I'm going to re-listen to this segment a couple times because that was confusing. But you might be right. You kind of got me, but then as you're talking, I was also thinking, well, wait a second. We have the Captain Carter, and then we have in the Avengers one where that one all gets screwed up. We still see another Captain America in there too at the end with Nick Fury and stuff. So yeah. And then there's just a lot with what you said. So I gotta go back.
Yeah, because I just think like the events of that episode almost mirror the events of the movie, right? Almost down to the T, right? But little things are changed. So I'm just wondering that because of the previous events of the prior episodes, that these kind of change the wrinkle of time, the butterfly effect, if you will, and then kind of spirals everything off. Now, we do know what happens again with Thanos and everything. So what happens there? I don't know. But again, it's just a thought.
But that's why that's where I got confused, though, because we have the one that, like, I don't know that these are all from the same timelines necessarily, the same universe, however it fucking works. I get confused there still. But because Captain Carter, if you have the Captain Carter stuff, then the Avengers one at the end, we don't have that with the the Captain America shield at the end, right? Because that's Steve. It seems like it's Steve. So I don't know. I'm a little confused on that one. Or maybe it's still Captain Carter and she got fucking froze at some point too. I don't know. But that's the hole in that logic. That's the only one. But it's a big one.
And I think the double-edged sword of this introduction of the multiverse here is that it's great for shows like us and everything that we can speculate abound and kind of go crazy with fan theories. But it also gets very confusing and convoluted as an event to kind of create like a paradox within itself and just kind of be like, all right, this is too confusing. I'm going to withdraw completely. And I think that's long-term could be an issue down the road.
I think the big thing though is what Marvel is, I don't know for sure, but one thing that just like in comic books in general, because I know like Scott Snyder did this with the Death Metal event and we praised him for it with events, right? Because that's what the MCU is, just like one big event. Like it's not like comics where they have these own individual things and you kind of can go off on that. They all have to tie in. That's one of the reasons that it's just done so well. Because
what does it all mean, Nick? What does it all mean?
Exactly. But with events, when it's done well, you have these little tie-in things that, yes, they apply to the bigger story, but you don't like have to watch them. They're for like the bigger fans who want more. Now, sometimes with events, they go a little bit too far, but I think when you talk about this movie we're doing today, there was a tie-in, a one-shot that we talked about last week for this movie, and you didn't need to watch it to appreciate what happened in this film. But if you've watched just mainline stuff, you would have known already what happened with that character. You'd have been familiar with him. So I'm wondering if with some of this stuff, it's like, okay, it's great. It is for the people like me and you or our listeners who love this stuff, but don't necessarily like, but then the people who just want to watch the movies and that's it, they don't need to watch some of these things and they'll be fine.
You want to hear something cool about the one shot that you were just talking about, All Hail the King, with Sir Ben Kingsley and Trevor Slattery? That was made in 2014 and released in 2014.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah, it says it on there, right? But it wasn't out there. So it just made it kind of great. So it was able to kind of pick up, retroactively, Shang-Chi was able to kind of be like, all right, let's work Ben Kingsley back into here.
So they, okay, hold up, but you said it wasn't released though, or it was released in 2014. I understand.
It was a direct to video short film featuring the MCU character Trevor Slattery.
Wow. Okay.
But they just put it back on Disney Plus, obviously, because of the ties back in there, and then connecting it to his appearance later in the movie there. But so enough about the what if stuff, but I think that's a little bit more interesting. You know, not my favorite, but my second favorite episode. Seinfeld, we'll go quickly through this one because everyone knows this is a show about nothing here, but it's launching on October 1st after paying $500 million for the 180 episode catalog.
Jesus, I can't believe Julia Louis-Dreyfus is still working. I mean, I gotta imagine she's getting a cut of this, right?
Oh, really? Yeah, I'm sure they're all getting the residual paychecks and all that stuff here. So, good on them.
I'm definitely going to be watching this. I know certain somebody who hasn't seen any Seinfeld yet, so we're going to be watching this.
Oh, really? Wow. So, yeah, that'll be definitely fun to see their first reaction going through it there. So that's fun. It's almost like you're going through it for the first time.
Exactly.
Speaking of the first time, Dune is getting rave reviews to first-time moviegoers of the Venice Film Festival. Excuse me. One viewing received a 7-minute standing ovation, Nick, and has early returns on Rotten Tomatoes with an 85%.
Is this on our list of things we're going to review?
I think we should. This looks very good. They're saying standout performances by Timothée Chalamet.
Ooh.
And of course, who else is Josh Brolin, Dave Bautista, Zendaya's in there. So star-studded cast.
This is a movie that I feel like I know you were interested in it and other people have. I've always been like, okay, yeah, I'll see it. But like everybody seems to be going nuts for it. Now it is a book. I believe previously, I know there's stuff.
Yeah, science fiction, epic, post-apocalyptic type stuff. You know, sign me up for that.
Yeah,
the cinematography, I think, is the same cinematographer from Eternals and stuff. So I think that's something to kind of keep getting excited about if you're looking for that MCU kind of tie into things. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So let's. I think we should definitely pencil this in as a pen it in, I guess, if you will.
Put it in pen.
Awesome. Awesome for a review. Now, the last thing before we get to the comic book minute, we actually got this from Amy over at midnight.fm. Of course, you guys listen to us over there as well. As Tim Weisberg, our former guy in the chair, and many other paranormal investigator type shows. Patty Jenkins apparently is not a fan of the movies that have been going straight to streaming services, Wes. She quoted saying, "All of the films that streaming services are putting out, I'm sorry, they look like fake movies to me. I don't hear about them. I don't read about them. It's not working as a model for establishing legendary greatness."
And spot the lie, Nick. Spot the lie.
Well, Wes, I mean, okay, legendary greatness, okay, maybe, but I still feel like we've had some good movies. I mean, there are definitely some that's like, but what about Old Guard? Like, that was, like, when we talk about how it was shot, that was next level shit.
No, I agree. It's cool. Like, there's definitely been movies that I've been surprised at and movies that I've enjoyed watching, but again, we talk about expectations versus reality. These movies, of course, aren't free. They're a part of your subscription monthly payments. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, these are free movies.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what you're getting at. So the bar is already lowered than saying, here's my $13.50 for a movie ticket. I'm going to be driving 10 miles to the movie theater. I'm going to be paying another $15 in snacks and stuff like that. And I'm going to be committing 2 hours in a cold, dark room sitting next to people I don't know. Then, like, you know, are you going to go do all of that for the Old Guard? Like, I don't know. I think, you know, less people are going to go through that process for those type of movies. But if it's the ability to sit at home during a pandemic where you have nowhere to go and everything else is shut down, like, yeah, maybe that's a good time to watch it. But I'm not going to sit here and try to compare this to, say, I don't know, Dune, for example, or, you know, anything else, you know, that's kind of come out recently.
I'll tell you what, it's there. Remember, we always got these made for TV movies, right? We got those a lot.
Right.
Of course, Disney and ton. But these are absolutely a step above. Now, obviously, you know, given the time period and the advancement in technology, it makes sense. But that's fine if she wants, like, the cinematic ones. Sure, they're next level. But we're also at the early stages of these Netflix and Hulu and whatever original movies, all these kinds of things. But so they could grow down, you know, along the line. But still, these are better than the, you know, made for TV movie. So, like, I understand the criticism. Like, it's a fair point to it, but at the same time, like I still like quite a bit of the movies we've gotten on there. And the shows are on that same level too. And that's the thing that's more important. The shows are stepping up in production level and acting level and everything like that.
I think TV in general is just outproducing movie but as far as quality. But when you talk about this is a little bit of a glass stone situation, especially if you saw at least 20 minutes of Wonder Woman 84. So, you know, it's like, I don't know if this is the soapbox to be standing on at the moment, Patty, but I agree with you.
That was actually one thing that when I saw this, I'm like, wait a second, your movie was made for the cinemas, and it was the part of the problem was how it was shot was so brutal. But yeah, so anyways, speaking of Wonder Woman, we can actually move over to the comic book minute before we get into our main topic. So I actually don't have any Wonder Woman stuff for you this week. I want to keep it quick. Excellence from Image Comics, Skybound Entertainment, Joe and I, I talked about this on the show. This might have been the second book I talked about on the show. They've been having a lot of pauses in their production of the comic. Issue 11 comes out this week. Joe and I are extremely excited to talk about this book. We've just been waiting for it for so long. I don't know what the issues have been. I know the writer's been very busy doing a lot of DC stuff, but can't wait for that. And I highly recommend that book to everybody. Go listen to TLDR, like the second episode, and I talked about it on there. And as for this week, I am going to be talking about Why the Last Man, which is I believe a Vertigo book. So it's part of DC Comics. It was by Brian K. Vaughan, who wrote Saga. So, you know, there's a good chance it's going to be good. I've, you know, been reading it and I'm really enjoying it. Keith loves it. It's in the show starts on FX this week. So there you go. That's why we're doing it.
Something to read, something to watch. I like it.
Yeah, exactly. That's
timeliness, almost like the timeliness of lining up Chris Tucker's birthday with the release of our Rush Hour original versus sequel debate.
How weird was that?
Whoa.
I was blown away. I was just, what the fuck? That was like,
we've done
like
this a couple times now where we haven't really planned around something and then it just kind of lined up right.
I don't know how it happens. It's crazy. But And like Doc did with Shang, well, he did this deliberately. Doc talked about Shang-Chi on TLDR this past week. And now all of the DSG is talking about Shang-Chi this week, which we are going to do right now, Wes.
Yes, of course. We're doing our Shang-Chi in the legend of the Ten Rings there. And the synopsis is Shang-Chi, the master of unarmed weaponry-based kung fu, is forced to confront his past after being drawn into the Ten Rings organization. And folks, I really hope you pay close attention to this next part. Listen close, ladies and gentlemen.
Cast and crew, written and directed by Destin Daniel Cretton, starring Simu Liu as Shang-Chi. And I wanted to say as a quick side note, they did a really good job of like explaining how to pronounce it in the movie with Awkwafina. That was outstanding.
Right. Yeah.
Speaking of Awkwafina, she's Katie. Tony Chu as Wen Wu, the Mandarin. Menger Zhang as Xi Lang. Fala Chen as Liko Wu, of course, mom. Michelle Yeo as Ying Nang, the aunt. In the movie, Hua Yuan, Master Guang Bo. Florian Mentanyu as Razor Fist. What the? Wait a minute. His name is the toughest one for me to say so far. I didn't expect that. Of course, Ben Kingsley as Trevor Slattery, Benedict Wong as Wong, and Andy Lee as the Death Dealer.
I wanted to give you a couple easy ones to kind of, you know, land softly into there, but I really enjoyed putting that one together. I think you did an awesome job, by the way.
Thank you. I can't believe Razor Fist was the one that I had the toughest time with. I didn't see that coming.
Eastern European, right? Montanu?
Okay.
Florian Montanu? Montanu?
Montanu?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, that was different. But tell me about the box office shit.
So it pulled in nearly, of course, we're recording this on a Saturday morning here, so we don't have the full weekend numbers here, but pulled in nearly $9 million on Thursday evening releases and is on pace to eclipse F9's $70 million three-day opening performance, but likely to trail Black Widow's 80.3 million pandemic best three-day opening there. So somewhere kind of in there, and of course this is just kind of based off projection, so not totally there. Currently has an 8.1 out of 10 on IMDb and a astounding 92-99 split on Rotten Tomatoes, Nick. Of course, we're going to be going spoiler-filled here, so if you have not seen this yet and you're watching on the live stream and everything like that, spoiler-filled. Nick, what is your tweet-length review and score?
So First, I'm seeing that it might trail Black Widow. I know it's really early, but that is kind of mind-blowing. But then at the same time, Wes, we're starting to get some COVID restrictions coming back, so it does make sense that you might run into some issues there. But anyways, tweet
internationally length. Too. This is going to be gangbusters.
Yes, yeah, one would think. All right, tweet length review and score for me. So I gave this a 90 out of 100. Of course, that is what our scale is on Change My Mind. Marvel,
very sophisticated.
Yeah, exactly. We want to keep things simple. Everybody else wants to do like hot dogs and, you know, stones, whatever that fucking means. Marvel has done 4 origin movies very well so far. Iron Man, Ant-Man, Doctor Strange, and now Shang-Chi. Iron Man had RDJ's charisma. Ant-Man had humor, mainly driven by Paul Rudd, of course. So Doctor Strange had the mind-bending cinematography, and we get some of that here. But mainly, Shang-Chi had its unbelievably fluid action sequences.
And what I thought was great too, kind of coming into this, having watched Rush Hour 1 and Rush Hour 2 and just kind of marveling at all the stunt work that Jackie Chan does, I think that kind of helped appreciate things going into this. You're like, wow, this is some really cool stuff here, just to kind of get the mind right for it. And I will say too, a little caveat here to the folks listening at home, perhaps you're listening for the first time. When we do our rewatch vaults, we are going through everything to this point. So we are up to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So I believe, I don't want to speak for Nick here, but when he says his 4 favorite origin movies, you know, that is not including Captain Marvel, Black Panther, Spider-Man Homecoming, some of the movies that we have yet to review yet, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of those I would not count. But yeah, I would say Black Panther we haven't gotten to yet. So I looked over our list. Yes, Black Panther is on there. So they've done 5.
I just want to make sure for the folks listening at home here, you know.
Yep. Nope. 5 is sorry. Thank you. I had a brain fart. We have not graded that one out yet, but no, that's the only other one. I wouldn't count Captain Marvel in that one. Like I would like there are some that have been like solid, but like we've given good grades, but there are some that stand above others, and Black Panther is there too.
I agree. We just haven't got there yet. So I think we all imagine that's going to be up there at some point in time. So, but I think, you know, Nick, grading to scale, we're in agreement on this. I gave this an 86 out of 100. So this is tied currently for my second favorite MCU origin movie with Iron Man, with Ant-Man being a little bit higher than that at 88. Still, again, Spider-Man, Black Panther, Captain Marvel notwithstanding. But this movie hits on everything you want out of an MCU movie with just a little bit more. I think you get, you know, just a little bit more than what you were expecting out of this one here. It's a tad slow at times, and I could do without this CGI mess at the end. That kind of knocks it down for me. But great story, a lot of emotional feel about family, and again, awesome action scenes in here. So with the 86-90 score, that averages out to an 88. Which again comes in tied for 7th or 8th right now with Ant-Man. No, comes in directly at 8, excuse me, with an 88, just behind Ant-Man at 89, just in front of Iron Man at 87.5.
Yeah, I think that's right about where it belongs. You know, seeing where Doctor Strange is, it's a little bit below, and we were a little bit further apart on our grading there. But yeah, and I don't think I was like between an 89 and a 90, but like we're not doing half points here. On our individual scores, like that's ridiculous. For how wide of the range we have for our grading, but yeah. And just a quick note, I would like to add, like when I talk about when I talked about like the different like the origin movies, how they had like their definitive thing so far, and that's why he's made them so special. Black Panther, I would say social impact would be my biggest thing.
Oh yeah,
off of that one. No, we're just
holding back because we just haven't got there yet. You know, well, I think we're about to hit that MCU sweet spot. I think with Homecoming, Ragnarok, Black Panther, which I think where they're really at their peak.
Well, someone may have been holding back, but someone else may have had a brain fart. So I'm just trying to be honest with the people. And
well, I was trying to speak for you there. I was trying to throw you the life preserver.
You're a nice guy. I just want to drown. You know, I mean, it's just what it is. But anyways,
it's a little bit nicer in the morning for me. Yeah. A little bit nicer.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. All right. So, but yeah, in all seriousness, though, I think when you're talking about origin movies, you can't have them too high on these lists. And we're going to talk about that. But like, this is still a good spot, and this will move down as we go through some of these other movies. But anyways, let's get rolling on these questions, Wes, and I will throw it to you first. What part of this movie will age the best?
First and foremost, it has to be within what is like the first 15-20 minutes of the movie, the trolley car fight scene with Razor Fist and the goons of the Ten Ring organization there. You talked about the fluidity of the fight choreography and everything. I mean, that is like so cool. And again, bringing up like the Jackie Chan movements, how we can like go through all that stuff. I'm not sure to what degree Simon Liu did his own stunt work, but it looked very fluid to it. There was one scene in particular where he takes his jacket off, ties someone around, flings him around, kicks him, and then puts his jacket back on and then punches someone like and kind of like straightens out his pulls on his lapels, you know, like. Yeah. Very, very cool, very swaggy like moves from Simon Liu there. So I mean, unbelievable fight scene.
That was amazing, and and that specific moment was like it was definitely an oh shit moment. I don't know how much of it we got in the trailer, but we definitely got some of it in like at least one of the trailers.
That didn't even ruin it for me though.
That shows like how amazing of a scene that was. It's crazy that it didn't ruin it at all. Like I felt the same exact way. We have other good options here for what will age the best, but I think it's gonna be that. And the thing is too, like. You know, there could be an argument like, well, this is like you said, first 20 minutes. It might even be first 10 minutes. I can't remember. No, probably not first 10. Either way, it happened really fast.
Right. It's like, and it kind of gets you locked in like, okay, let's do this. Yeah.
And there's still plenty of other good action sequences. Like, you know, I wouldn't put this one necessarily on the list of like what's going to age the best. But when you talk about the general fight choreography, the scene on the side of the building was awesome. That was really well done. Not better than the trolley car fight scene, but it was really good.
It was anxiety inducing. As someone who has a fear of heights, I had my vertigo kicking in at that point. And we talk about like not being ruined by the trailers, like certain scenes and stuff. I thought one moment that was kind of lessened from the trailer exposure was the fight between Wong and Abomination. Because that was about the length of which we got it. It was very short.
Yes. Yeah. They had the little thing afterwards where they talked and they seemed like they're like buddies, which okay. Yeah.
And they went off together, right? Yeah. They left together.
Yeah. So at least they have that. But otherwise it was just like, okay. Like it was cool. Like I still enjoyed it. I still liked it, but it's like, you didn't get more other than that little bit afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, the usage of the 10 rings in the fights, what I thought was very cool. And the way that they weren't really just, they could use them tactically at certain points to hold on at certain point, but they could also use them to project like, you know, air and energy and stuff like that. So I thought that was a really cool, again, that fluidity to go back and forth with it was really well done.
10 rings were awesome. They were so cool. There's a lot of questions with those things. Right. We're going to get answers as we go along, like in the MCU, but I was, you know, I, honestly, like coming into this, I just didn't have expectations for the 10 rings, so maybe that helped.
Absolutely, but I agree. I didn't really know what to expect here. Again, not reading the comic books or having a familiarity with the background or lore, I agree.
The fighting, I had very high expectations for. Like, Shang-Chi is like this big-time martial artist in the comics, and I mean, I remember like seeing, like, at one point I was reading Domino, went to see him about training and stuff, so I just in general, like, I would think we're going to get a lot of that in this movie. And they kicked ass with. So like that's good for me. That absolutely gets my vote. I know you have a couple other candidates outside of that in the 10 rings.
Yeah, this is more honorable mention type stuff. Any of the mythical creatures, but particularly the lion dogs. I thought they were awesome.
Those are cool. Yeah, they did a really good job with that stuff. Definitely stuff you could mess up on. Like even though it's Marvel, you can mess up on that.
Yeah, the dragon stuff. You start to lose me on the dragon stuff, but the land animals and like going through when they actually get to Ta Lao, it kind of had like a Jurassic Park type of feel when they're seeing like going through the first time. I don't know. I thought that was kind of cool.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And anytime Xi Ling, I'm going to be butchering.
Xi Ling, I think.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Used her get over here scorpion dagger. That is like one of the coolest weapons in Asian lore. Because I think you see that also in Kill Bill, right? Doesn't like the schoolgirl have that?
I think so. I haven't seen that thing in so long.
Cause she's like, it's like dipped with dragon stone in the end, and she's like kicking the heavy end with it, but also has the dagger, and like, I'm just so cool.
That's a character who we got stuff from, but like I would have liked more. And we'll talk about her. Yeah, we'll talk about her a little bit more. But I think we got to move to what part of the movie will age the worst.
Yeah, this is kind of more of a joke. Like, this movie could have been avoided if Leiko, the mother, just had better choice in men. Like, what did she see in Wan Wu? This guy is clearly an asshole, and they do like their sex dancing thing in the river, and then like they're like, all right, like He's cool.
Well, you know what, Wes? I think women just want to, they see a guy, they see potential, and they want to make him better. And
yeah.
But I think you actually have another legitimate point, though.
Yeah, the CGI overhaul at the end, I'm not too concerned with the ring battle so much as the dragon battle between the monsters. I thought, again, this kind of brings up a WandaVision-type moment where everything gets very dark and clouded, you know, Game of Thrones season finale-type stuff where, like, the CGI is too much and they just don't have the money for it, so they're like, let's darken everything. Mm. And it was tough to kind of keep track of what was going on at that moment.
So,
I don't know. I thought it kind of took away from, you know, what was essentially a pretty grounded story despite being like mythical.
So I felt like, okay, so yes, we're talking about what's going to age the worst. If anything, it is going to be that, because we don't really have much else outside. Like, this is, as much as we don't have this as like a 95 or whatever, it's like an origin story. Like, there's a certain expectations, a certain like ceiling on that.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes, I do think when we go back and rewatch this, people who go back and rewatch this, that's going to be like the one thing where it's like, eh, okay, like whatever. Like, I don't care about that necessarily as much just because there was so much awesome fighting between Wenwu and Shang-Chi. Mm-hmm. That's all you think you like need. At the same time, I think we will look back, especially when we saw what happened with the end credit scene, we're going to see like, oh, these 10 rings are even more powerful than we saw. And we saw it we got a taste of it with the dragon fight. And I think we needed something like that for then this to like, to pull on this, like this is like to create a little loose thread that we can pull on later. Cause if we just had it with him and his dad fighting, and then later on, it's like, oh wait, these are even more powerful than we thought. Then we'd be like, why didn't they show mm-hmm. that in Shang-Chi like originally? So that, like, I think we needed this still.
No, I agree. I think it worked out well. I would have liked a little bit more with the Death Dealer. I thought he was really cool. I loved his mask. The mask mm-hmm. reminded me of Three Ninjas, for those of you who are familiar with that classic VHS special. It reminded me of that a lot there. But again, you know, I get it. I don't know. It just seemed to cheapen things a little bit at the end. And like, I'm watching on the big screen. I'm thinking this could be like the best possible way to view that movie and that scene in particular, and I just came away like a little bit like, I don't know, I was a little disappointed by that at the end.
Yeah, well, that's fair. I think and again, I think when you go back and rewatch this, that's going to be the part where like you're watching all the action stuff you're watching, and that's going to come up and you're like, okay, like that'll probably, like, people will become disengaged probably the most by that upon rewatch, because that's what we're talking about, what will age the worst. Mm-hmm. But let's go back to the positive. What did you like about this movie, Wes?
I mean, again, I think this is the no-brainer, the fight choreography. We talk about action all the time in Marvel movies and how it's almost not even worth mentioning because they always do it well. This feels a little bit different to me than, like, say, the action of Black Widow, which was also good, but, again, very different action than of Captain Marvel or Guardians of the Galaxy or anything like that's cosmic related to. I don't know, this feels, again, very much more grounded than any of your other grounded MCU action movies or of your cosmic shoot 'em up type CGI things. This is just a very different action feel to me.
So the one thing I do want to – well, there's other – I want to mention that the mid-credit scene was outstanding. That's the one I want to throw out there. That's one of the best ones we've gotten. But the fight choreography is absolutely what gets my vote. And honestly, Wes, like this – so when we get the action sequences with like heroes and stuff like that, like these extra powered guys, like don't like Cap or maybe somebody who has a, you know, a suit of iron or whatever, mm-hmm. and or you got weapons involved. Sure, those things have been great and I've really enjoyed them. But I feel like when we look at this fight choreography versus anything else, like it's kind of all put to shame by Shang-Chi. Like all the other MCU stuff, when we're talking like human versus human combat, it's not even close. This is the most fluid stuff that we've seen so far. And I think whoever's like the people that were in charge of that, like putting this all together, they need to be a major part of the MCU's like productions going forward, because they did an outstanding job. As I understand, the actors are partially mm-hmm. to credit too, and maybe the stunt doubles, if there were any for some of these characters, if they're not already just stunt doubles playing out action characters in this.
Right. Yeah.
But I really, like, I was blown away by how fluid it all was.
Yeah. Again, the fluid, I think that's a perfect way of describing it. I think we've hit on that enough to the point. I think that is far and away the best part of this, but I did like the family aspect about this. I thought that was very interesting and kind of getting Wanwu's motives behind here and seeing how humanized he was and that how the family did kind of break this you know, unbroken horse, so yep. to speak, you know, this wild horse. I'm going to put everything away. That said, you know, I like the complexity of him.
Yeah. He's an interesting character who's honestly like his origin. Like I wouldn't mind seeing more, like not in a movie necessarily. I don't think we'll ever get it, but maybe they could do something in the comics where I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit more about that character.
I think we are, because we still don't know how we got the 10 rings. So, going back and reading things and stuff and watching YouTube videos, that was the big thing that everyone kind of goes back to, is that we didn't get, you know, where they came from. That was the big question, you know, after the mid-credit scene and everything. So I imagine they left that open to go back for a sequel or something to explore later on down the road.
Yeah, and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about the Ten Rings in a second and their origin. But first, what didn't you like about this movie? I'm actually going to go first on this one, Wes.
Real quick, I do want to make a note for Awkwafina. I really enjoyed Awkwafina's performance here in this movie. And I came in thinking, like, what might bring this down? I think she could be chewing the scenery too much, a little too loud for me. Mm-hmm. But I thought she was really funny in this. I really enjoyed her.
Yeah, she was good. I know she's well-known name and everything, but I can only remember her being in one thing, and I was like, oh, she was funny, but not, she didn't like blow my, like knock my socks off or anything.
She was Crazy Rich Asians, of course.
I didn't see that.
Ocean's 8, which I thought was okay, but not my favorite.
I think that's what I saw her in. I was like, okay, she's like, there's potential, but she didn't like blow me away. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. But this was definitely better. That's a good call. Yeah, she absolutely deserves that. But when we go into what we didn't like about this movie, of course, Awkwafina does not fall under this umbrella. And you know that I have a tough time with this sometimes when we're talking about when we get into a certain grade range, it's usually tougher for me to find something I didn't like. And this is like a weird way to knock a superhero movie, especially from someone who like reads the comics and loves all the action stuff. But when I look at this movie, it's like, yeah, okay, like you talk about the family stuff, Wes, and that is interesting, but like if the action's not there, and this is a weird knock, seriously, I know this, but if the action's not there, like what's the grade that we're giving this movie? I feel like it's significantly worse.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can tell how hard of a time that you're having because you're pulling strings. So you're like, what happens when we take the action out of an action movie?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. You don't have
a movie. I feel stupid saying it.
That's it. But I will say, again, the origin story formula, I'm a little sick of it. You know, I think that's kind of becoming a downside of the superhero comic book genre, is that the formula there is just, there's a lull in everything. There's, again, it kind of feels like what are these movies? All the comedy movies with Seth Rogen, who's the actor in those? Judd Apatow. All the Judd Apatow movies, like again, all have the same formula where they have like a real long third act to get there, and it just draws the movie out. Like I feel like you kind of get a similar thing with these origin stories. That again, you have to find out what their motives are. They have to find out, you know, lose everything before they can gain something. It's the hero's journey. Like, I don't know. This one was a little bit different, but again, that's my knock on this.
That's my thing. Like so it's fair that, yes, like we talk about the ceiling for the origin movies. There's absolutely like a lower ceiling on these than a sequel or any of these ensemble cast things. But to me, this was, I thought it was better done all around because like,
instead of, and
I know with your grade, of course, like it just says it right there that you think it's better. But I think with some of these characters, like, oh, they've screwed up, or like they there is a redemption story, or whatever. But with Shang-Chi, it's like, no, I was like this, like I was like a dude, like I could kick, I can always kick ass pretty much. And now it's like I just ran away from it. And I know there are characters that we get that with, but like I just feel like we haven't gotten that as much with these origin stories.
No, I really like that. And I think, you know, to your point of even mentioning like that, the trolley car fight scene in the first 10, 15 minutes, you know, I think that even speaks to kind of like, again, shifting a little bit away from, the typical origin formula there. But like, that's a little bit of a nitpick. I would say something that I do think is a little bit higher up on my grievances is his uniform. I don't know. What'd you take away from that?
Yeah, I guess that's a fair point, but I mean, like,
he's just wearing like pants and Jordans, but like, and then he's got the dragon skull, like three, or the dragon scale, like three quarter.
But I know, like
baseball shirt,
he has like Shang-Chi, like has a look in the comics, but it's not really like this, like the I don't know, like he doesn't have like, it's not like a crazy cool thing. It's just like a vest in like the big, the baggier pants. And like,
yeah,
the,
he's just got a shirt and like he's got like Levi black jeans on.
But like Jordans. That's what I mean. Like he's like his look is simple in the comics. So like to have him be extravagant here would be kind of odd. So
yeah, no, it's a little something. I don't know. I remember thinking I was like when the aunt was like, oh, the mother made something for you for your return back to Tao Lao here, and now they get the cool thing and they looks at it and then it's just like a shirt. You know, they're like, oh, she didn't get a chance to finish the pants. She didn't get that far, you know.
But yeah, I guess at the end of it, the thing we agree on is there's like a lull. I guess it's like it's kind of a lull, but like
it takes a long time to set up to the fight.
Yeah, but like there's not. Again, when we talk about like the origin stories for these characters, I understand you're getting tired of it, but this is one of the better ones. So it's Anyways, so we move on to what did you think of the mid-credit scene?
Yeah, this is, and again, I'm always a little bit concerned when the main takeaway is the mid-credit scene and not the movie itself, but I don't think that's necessarily the case here. I think this was a good movie with an even better mid-credit scene here that, that leaves it open to speculation. But of course, you have Captain Marvel and Bruce Banner and Wong, of course, all debating about the Ten Rings. What looks like they're using Stark technology to talk, you know, that he was using to build the time machine stuff in his home cabin, right?
Yeah,
they don't know where it's coming from,
right? Yeah, I don't know. I cut you off and all this. No. But this was seeing like I don't know if we had seen that Hulk was going to be in this, but because I saw his name pop up recently about something.
Well,
he's
not in this.
Well, okay, but at least you. Okay, yes, but I was actually that's actually a good point. This is after all of it, and we see regular Bruce Banner.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about it like that. I just saw, oh my god, it's Bruce Banner, like it's Hulk. He's here. That's an interesting point.
He still got the broken arm or what, you know, still nursing the injury from that. Yeah, but how did he go back there? Big question.
Oh my god, I didn't even have that question until right now. Holy shit.
There you go. That's You're welcome.
Right. Oh my god.
You know what the real answer is they'll write around this, but the you know, of course he's gonna be involved in She-Hulk and the Abomination getting involved back into the picture, right? That's gonna be involved in She-Hulk. It would be way too much money to have all that CGI in. You need a regular Bruce Banner. You know, to have all that CGI in for a Disney Plus show, they're like, nah, someone's got to be inhuman.
That's probably what it is. That's a good call. But you, as we were talking before the show, you made a really good point about what's going on with the Ten Rings and something I had noticed too, but like you took it another degree.
Well, yeah. So again, it talks about Wong and the impact, right? The beacon that it kind of sent out to the Kamataj, and they're like, "Listen, this is more than 1,000 years old, and all that stuff here. No, it's not no history about it. Captain Marvel doesn't know what's going on. Banner doesn't know what's going on. No vibranium, no nothing." So they're like, "What is this? I think it could be alien." But I'm wondering if this was a gift from the Eternals. Mm-hmm. No one knows who the Eternals are at this point. No one knows if their existence. This could be laying the groundwork for the next Marvel movie. A little something here, right? Depending on where exactly this all falls in the timeline of events. But I think that could be something that comes in play.
I saw, and I know you did, as we were kind of just doing research after we've seen the movies and getting ready, that we saw Galactus, his name kind of getting thrown around and all this, and that could very well be the case. And this was, but the Eternals by you is a great call, and some people may see it as a no-brainer. I didn't think of it, so I think it's a great call out of West. Yeah. To me, it's like this is Marvel at their peak when they are giving you a good movie, and then they create questions though. Like you still got answers for like how, like what Ten Rings can do sort of, but not fully. And because we don't know their origin. And I thought that to me is like when you're doing that in comics too, like that's when their things are cooking at their best. Like you're creating these questions as we go, we're getting answers to things we want to, but now there's still stuff like, I want to know more about this, but you're not going to give it to me right away. Mm-hmm. And they did that perfectly with the Ten Rings. And now it's creating like a subplot too within all this. Like now, cause we have the multiverse stuff, but we also have the Eternal stuff, which seems like they wouldn't necessarily cross over into one another. Maybe they will. I don't know, but they've like, they're really doing a good job with the, like where there may be, you know, questions and or concerns with other stuff, creating the larger picture right now. I think they're still doing an outstanding job with that, Marvel as a whole.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of where they you know, is their sweet spot for them. That's their hot zone, if you will. But yeah, so I think they're still doing great work with that. I would have liked to seen, you know, I think the big question coming up is where's Doctor Strange. again, the protectors of your reality, Dick, you know, that's what he kind of is. And then like all this crazy stuff is happening. Like, where is he when this is going on? I know we get Wong, but you know, I don't really want the butler when I need Batman. You know, I don't really want the nurse when I need the doctor. Like what's going on here?
That's true.
So I think that's a fair question at this point. Again, if we're talking about the connective tissue of this, that's going to be the reoccurring question to all of this stuff until we find someone who is stronger and can handle everything more than he does.
Well, yeah, then you're going to ask if it's where they are. But I will say with Doctor Strange, though, was he has like when we saw what happened with Endgame, where he's like, you know, this has to happen or whatever, like only a certain amount of outcomes and whatever. Mm-hmm. There's also that element of like, well, some of these things, like he has to let them happen. Like, because we're dealing
that's actually an interesting point, maybe an unanswerable question. Like, once you've gone through, if you're Doctor Strange and you've lived through the 14 million different outcomes, like, how eager, like, how often or how tempting is it to like go in and not predict the future on everything? Mm-hmm. Go to the casino, just lay down like a couple of, you know, $1,000 on a bet or something like that, you know, like,
yeah,
well, yeah, that's got to be tempting. And then, I don't know, that's a time travel thing will screw me up.
Yes. Yeah. It's strange stuff is, I mean, I guess put it in one word is strange, but, anyways, what did you think of the end credit scene?
Yeah, definitely not as exciting as the first one was, but definitely I think has some interesting legs to it. We get Xi Ling taking over the Ten Rings crime syndicate now with women training. There's a little mix of men and women there. And my question, of course, is does she link up with the other crime syndicate women that we've seen established so far in this phase four rollout of the Black Widow assassins with Yelena and Sharon Carter and the Power Broker and all this stuff, this like underbelly of female crime bosses.
I think specifically the Sharon Carter and Power Broker thing, I think that's a great call out of you. I don't know about the Yelena stuff because it seems like they're trying to go like good with the Black Widow assassins, I would think, but that's definitely an option. But
do we think Xi Ling is bad?
That's a good point. Well, they're still like, so they're the ten rings now. There's part of me that wonders, are we going to get a rebrand out of her and turn them into the Five Weapons Society? Because that's the group that like we're dealing with in the comics. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if she's going to turn it into that to then kind of stay off Shang-Chi's radar for a little bit, because I can easily see him now worrying more about the rings that he had, the actual mm-hmm. rings and the cosmic stuff and dealing with Wong, where if I don't hear about the Ten Ring Society, I'm just going to assume Xi Ling disbanded it like we kind of thought she was going to. And now this, you know, he may not even hear about the Five Weapons Society. So that could be how they do it.
See, I see this. I like what you're saying there. And I can see this, again, setting up the ground-based Marvel as we see Phase 4 kind of forking off, right, to air and ground attacks here, if you will.
Yeah.
But now I see them kind of setting up as like these anti-hero types that maybe gets played up more in like Armor Wars or something. Now maybe it's like Rhodey and the Defense Department and all these guys are like, listen, we're getting all these terrorist groups forming here. Mm-hmm. And then Val playing in with like the, you know, Defenders and all that stuff, like, you know, Dark Avengers and all that stuff there. Right.
Yeah.
Like, then you have a villain to go after on the ground when you don't have to have, you know, Galactus be the big bad or Mephisto be the big bad, because, you know, now they're starting to talk about like demons and like dementors and stuff like that. And like, that's like some heady above the ear Fugazi type shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I will say when you talk about the grounded and Xi Ling would obviously fit into that grounded range and all these other characters you brought up with Black Widow, Assassin Yelena and Sharon Carter. Do not have Sharon Carter and Xi Ling fight, please, because I'm not going to believe that's going to end like it's like any faster than or any longer than 5 seconds. Like it's that's going to be done in a blink. Xi Ling is going to kick her fucking ass. Yelena might be able to hold her own. Obviously, you know, a cool character and everything, but Xi Ling, man.
And she can keep her distance with the scorpion dagger. I mean, keep everybody all around you. Like, that's crazy. The momentum you have to keep that going and like send it out. Like, it's amazing.
I mean, this may be a tougher one, but an idea that just popped in my head as an idea for an episode would be like Marvel or MCU characters that don't have powers, like power rankings. Like if we did it like from a fighting perspective, mm-hmm. you know, we'd have to work on the name, but like that's the working title I have. But
yeah,
she I know we only saw a little bit of her, but whew,
skill-based characters with the fist icon from Contest of Champions, right? Everyone gets that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because you got Hawkeye, you got Black Widow, Yelena, so and now Xi Lang. So or Xi Ling, excuse me, but now I'm messing it up. But anyways, what did you think of the villains, Wes?
Yeah, again, this is a little bit of my where I have a issue with the film here. The CGI mishmash at the end, again, reminded me of WandaVision in the finale there a little bit. I wish they stuck with Wenwu in the Death Dealer. I thought an interesting angle would be if Wenwu was like the big bad of this and the Death Dealer was the like the mini boss that Shang-Chi has to get by as the one who like abused him and really pushed him throughout his training as a child. And to kind of overcome that stepping stone of getting over that block of defeating his father. Like, I think that could have been interesting because I thought I loved his whole, you know, the cut of his jib, like Death Dealer. I loved the mask and everything. I don't know. I was a big fan of that.
But let me ask you this. So would you have then, trying to be objective here, do you think you would have said after the fact that we're dealing with the mirror match villain stuff again, because we have an award.
I probably would have said that. Probably would have said that. Yeah.
Okay. But at the end, the CGI monsters then give you that you like those characters more at the end. So that's good.
So it makes it interesting. I think it was maybe a little too much at the end. I think if they did that and like, you know, maybe it released and you get an end credit or you know a quick wrap up before the end of the you get the release of these demons and stuff, and then they have to at least open to like whatever you can carry on in the sequel or whatever the next story is in Shang-Chi or whether he pops up again somewhere else. I think that could have been more interesting, but I don't know. Overall, it's nitpicking stuff.
So with Wenwu stuff, I easily could have been like as much as there's like okay. I could have seen myself like walking out of this being like, I didn't really care about him as much. It didn't really do anything for me. Like I still liked the movie. I could have seen that happening, but I feel like they developed that character really well. And you're talking about how you wanted him more was great. And like, it shows that you can have that mirror matchy stuff happen sometimes and still have a really cool character that we care about. And like, that may be a slight knock on it, but in the end, like we've had it with Winter Soldier, right? He was an awesome character. He's cool. We've had it with Loki where he's like Thor, like he's like Thor, but he's just bad and like a little less powerful, but we still like him a lot too. So like it still clearly can be done, right? They're not going to stop. They're not going to stop with these mirror match type stuff, but you're like they know they have to flesh out these characters more and make you care about the villains just as much, if not more, than the heroes. So he was an awesome character. I love his fight scenes. And kind of just to go back to your CGI stuff too, as I'm watching Wenwu's soul gets fucking sucked out of him, I'm like, this is straight out of fucking Mortal Kombat.
I was thinking Harry Potter, but yeah, I can see that. Yeah. I mean, they drew on a lot. Like, I had big, like, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon vibes with the fights between Wenwu and Leiko, right? And, like, every time she does, like, the toe circle on the ground. I got like, big Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon vibes. Again, some Kill Bill type of vibes. And I feel like they were drawing a lot on like Chinese kung fu fighting culture movies there, like, you know, things like that are big in pop culture and kind of all kind of drew it in there as inspiration. So I really enjoyed that.
There's a small part of me that wants to go back and watch Iron Fist just comparatively to see how they did with the kung fu in that, because I felt like they did fine with it, but not nearly to this level. I'm not going to go back and rewatch Iron Fist, but I feel like now they absolutely put it to shame. I understand it's TV versus film, but it's still like Marvel. So,
And that's also Finn Balor there. What's his name? Is that his name? Finn Balor?
No, it's Finn. Finn is one of his names.
Finn Balor's a wrestler, but yeah.
I'll look it up in a second while you tell me your nominees for best performance by a side character.
Yeah, and you made a good point here. I had Awkwafina. I don't, you know, I think she's second billing on this movie. I'm not sure if that would define as a side character. And of course, she plays a huge role in defeating the ghost monster there, dragon.
Yes, she does. So she would have like. I don't think we can put her in there. She's, by the way, it's Finn Jones.
Thank you.
Yes,
and on Awkwafina, like as much as I did say I enjoyed her performance, I thought it came to a head at that moment. Like, I don't think she had to be a fighter in this movie to be to be effective. Yeah. They didn't have to make her in there, you know, but they did. It was cool. You know, that was a cool thing. Because then she's like, you know, if you aim at nothing, you miss at nothing. You know, then and she's talking about being lost in life. So I get the tie-in and all that stuff to it.
They and look, they didn't make her like originally. It was a little bit of a stretch, but at the same time, this is a character who, like, we know should be able to help in some capacity down the line because she's not fucking stupid. Like, she like she acts like,
they said she had a PhD or something like that, right? Yeah. In conversation,
She went to Berkeley and all this stuff. So, like, she's clearly a pretty smart individual. So, I'm excited to see how she develops as things go along. I don't know how, like, she, I think as time goes along, she will be a candidate for these side character awards.
Does she pop up in Hawkeye now? Does she go to the Hawkeye School of Training with the bow and arrow there? I don't know.
That would be cool. I'd like that just for that alone. That'd be cool. just a little appearance. But for me, my nominee is Xiling. Xiling. I had it right before. And she, I mean, you talk about her like Scorpion Mortal Kombat type weapon. That thing's fucking awesome. Anytime you get a character dealing with any sort of a whip, to me, like that, it's really cool. I mean, that's Castlevania is a character who has that a lot too. So
Catwoman.
Indiana
Jones.
No, but not like, okay, but that whip is different. Those whips are like the classic whips where it's like you're holding it at the bottom, the base, and you're like just casting it out there.
Yeah.
With these, like you tie a little bit of the end around you and then like you like grab it down the middle. It's just used differently. It's a different type of whip. But still, you're right. Those are more prominent whips. But I she gets my vote. I would have liked to see more of her, honestly. And hopefully we do down the line.
Yeah, I think you probably got the right answer there, but I'll make a claim for Razor Fist. Again, a great name, Taser Face type of thing. He's got a cool car, pretty cool fight scene. At first, I knew I recognized him, and I later found out that it was, you know, he was Drago's son in Creed 2. But at first, I thought he was the Ursa Major character that gets his hand broken by the bear. And I'm like, oh, like maybe that's like his hands broken back then. Fast forward a little bit or so. I don't know. Like maybe that's it, but that wasn't the case. And how about Morris? Our guy Morris there. Huh? He's going to be a big Korg-like Baby Yoda type fan favorite, I imagine.
Yeah, that would be,
He's cute and cuddly. He's got feathers and fur. I mean, what's not to love?
You're right, Wes. What's not to love?
He doesn't have a head. I mean, that's.
I just want to know how Vin Diesel getting these roles. It's really impressive.
Vin Diesel?
I'm just.
No, I would never have guessed. 7 million. That's his quote. You know.
They have to pay him that now. Yeah. Whether it's a good or a bad job.
Yeah, they set the precedent. Yeah.
Wes, who lost the movie?
This is easy for me. Trevor Slattery.
Yeah,
lost the movie because they bring him back in. He's a funny guy, but if for nothing else, when he was playing dead during the battle, you know, and he's like, this is a performance, you know, get down here with me, when he says to Morris, and then like is mourning the death of everyone else around him at the end by sending off like, you know, the little candle on the water there, like just acting like nothing happened, and he just didn't help anybody. He just played dead. I was in a war, you know, like stolen valor. That's what it feels like to me.
He'd do get help. He would go along with that.
He did do get help.
I think Ben Kingsley is like, I wouldn't put him as up for a winner, but I think like the actor for him, like, yeah, this is cool. I'm back in the MCU. You know, people don't hate my character as much. Now you kind of see, like, it makes sense. Whoever came up with the idea of bringing him back in and how, like, either bring him back in or the original idea of doing all this in the first place, I think that person could be like a winner when it comes to this movie. But yes, I think Trevor Slattery is like really the only one who's like a loser, other than maybe Wenwu, kind of.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Cause he dies and then gets tricked by him and everything, loses his family. Yeah. All that stuff. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a lot of loser qualities there, but again, like, I don't even know the idea of, I liked him being introduced back into this movie, having that tie and having to pay the role, you know, for taking on the Mandarin's name. I don't like how they didn't kill him. Like, in what mind would this Mandarin, who's 1,000 years old, who this guy is just profiting off his name and like soiling his name, and, you know, and this drug addict just doesn't just kill him.
Maybe because they just see how pathetic he is, and he's like, how can I be mad at him?
That's again, another reason why he lost this movie.
Yeah, there you go. Then that brings us to who won the movie, Wes?
Shang-Chi. Yeah, it's right in the title. You know, and the character and the actor. I thought they both did a great job of this.
Yeah.
I'll give a little bit of flowers to Tony Chu, who is the Wanwu actor here. And again, referenced that he's 1,000 years old. I think he does a good job of kind of, you know, portraying that wisdom, you know, mm-hmm. and that years, especially when you're talking about Gong Bo, where when he first gets to the Tao Lao, and he's like, you know, don't talk to me that way, boy. He's like, I'm way older than you, and you forget. He looks so young that you forget that he is. I'm like,
yeah,
just how he handles talking to Shang-Chi through everything. It's with this, like, you don't know anything. I know everything about you. It's not that I'm just 20 or 30 years older than you. Like, I am lifetimes, like generations older than you, and seen so much. And you, compared to me, are just like a speck of dust.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was kind of like a very cool way to portray it.
I thought his performance was awesome, and so definitely worth bringing up in this category. But I do think you're right that it's Shang-Chi is the absolute winner. I think this, and I think Simu Liu also is right there specifically because he should get more roles out of this. I mean, he was awesome in this. I've seen some criticisms of his acting, and I understand like maybe there were some flaws, but his martial arts, like, I did see that he did. It seemed like he did quite a bit of his own action scenes, if not all of them.
What were the flaws? What were they saying?
I just saw people saying like he didn't have like he couldn't carry the lead role specifically. I don't. Like, okay, fine. Like, I don't know.
See that. Yeah.
I really liked him. Like, I don't. I think anytime you have a movie where it's just so heavy on one character, like, I understand. There's one that a straw that stirs a drink, of course, and that is Shang-Chi in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But like when we get too much, which is like always around this one person every friggin' second, and they have to be the one talking the whole time, I don't want that. Like, I like a little bit of an ensemble feeling to it, even if it's not an ensemble cast.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a story. That's what we're supposed to be dealing with. But anyways, I think his career is going to blossom even further from this. Mm-hmm. But I think Shang-Chi, this is a character who, like, we talk about how, you know, you don't have Captain America anymore, you don't have Iron Man. I don't necessarily think that, like, I don't know about adults if they're going to hook to Shang-Chi like that, but I think kids are going to love this character and be hooked on
it. Oh, yeah. I mean, they're going to be doing front kicks and stuff like that, wheelhouses and stuff, like, all over the place in the backyard. It's going to be insurance companies are going to love Shang-Chi, I think.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so they're the big winners and all this. And I think martial art fans, too, this is, like, when you talk – we've seen – of course, martial art movies over the years, but now you're seeing it on the MCU scale. I think if you like, you know, the MCU and you like martial arts, it's probably a lot of the same, right? We're gonna get more of this down the line, a lot more of this.
Yeah, yeah. You know, who is it? The UFC there. Who's the UFC president? Dana White. He's also a big winner of this here.
Yeah, right. That's actually a pretty fair call too. I didn't think of that. There we go. All right. So I think that's it for our Shang-Chi exit review, right? We've butchered that name enough times.
Yeah, so. I think we've butchered all the names enough here. I think we can move on, but not the movie. The movie is unbutcherable.
Yes, yeah, if you will. All right. So let's head over to the Discharge Depot then. What's up with you, Wes? What's been going on since we've last talked?
Yeah, I went to Cisco Brewery's Kitchen and Bar in New Bedford, Nick. Not too far from your neck of the woods here. I don't know if you got a chance to visit that with the lady yet, but it was a fantastic time. Beach bar, outdoor vibe thing. You go play cornhole, play Big Connect 4, sit outside. You can go in the restaurant, get some sushi. Like, huge, huge outdoor space right on New Bedford Harbor. Beautiful. Highly suggest it if... I think they're staying open through Columbus Day. So if you're yourself on the South Coast, at least the outdoor part, the restaurant's going to be open year round.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, you know, I may have figured out what I'm going to do for next weekend then with Lauren. I
highly suggest that. And then tomorrow I'm going to Martha's Vineyard, a weary traveler of me here. The wife and I are celebrating our second anniversary a little earlier here. So we're going out that way.
Happy anniversary, Wes.
Well, thank you very much.
I think I have it saved in my phone. I try and save anniversaries.
Oh, do you?
Like that.
Do you
really? Yes, so I can text you. I think I do. If not, I gotta circle back and put that in there, but I'm pretty sure I do.
That's nice. That's a nice guy.
Yeah, I try and do some nice things once in a while. As for me, I went to Boston Fan Expo this past the other day with Dr. Joe. I was only able to go the one day because just unfortunately things popping up on the rest of the weekend.
Life happens,
but we had a great time. There's a lot of craziness. We posted some stuff on Twitter, some stuff on Instagram, so make sure you guys go check that out and talk to a few different people. So maybe we'll have a guest coming out of that for the show a little bit later on down the line. Hopefully we'll work towards that. But yeah, it was it was a fun time, and there were definitely a few toys I wanted to get. I didn't buy any for myself, but there was a lot there, and I was
like, I saw a few pics in the group there. I saw the Casey Jones. I saw a couple other things in there.
Oh, my God. But there was some stuff, and it was like, oh, I saw a couple Moon Knight things, and I asked the guy, how much does this one cost? $80. I'm like, come on. This is Marvel Legends. Like, I understand it's not in production anymore, but it's $80? I can't. I saw, like, a Darth Revan thing for $60, and I've been trying to get that. It's like, that's like just too much. I can't do that.
You got to haggle with them.
Yeah, that's true. I'm a bad haggler. I did it at baseball card shows as a kid. I just haven't done it. Yeah, that's a good point, Wes. It's a good point.
That's what you're there for. You'd be like, hey, listen, I can we can live stream this haggle on the on my podcast account there, and then yeah, we can bring the price down. You get a little plug to your stop shop there. You know, I don't know.
That's a good call, Wes. That would have been a good call. That's God damn it. That's actually a good idea. But you know, we did for the podcast too. Joe and I put out a bunch of bookmarks and handed them out to people too. So we still got some left, but that was great. And then. A side note from that, 9 Perfect Strangers available on Hulu right now. I think we're 4 or 5 episodes in, but Lauren read the book and got me in on this show. It's been really, really good. I don't know if I talked about it on here already. I feel like I did.
I felt like you brought it up at some point. I've definitely heard it before.
Yeah. I think it's 5 episodes in now, if not 4, but it's dropping every Wednesday. I can't recommend this enough to anybody and everybody. It's been really, really enjoyable so far. There's a character in there for everybody. And the story's like weird enough, but like also it's a completely like a grounded story. Like could happen in real life. Sort of deal, not like Marvel and stuff. So yeah, it's very interesting. We both really enjoyed it.
All right, I love it.
All right,
this is gonna be a short DSG this week, I think.
Yes. Yeah, so if I could find, I didn't have the video queued up, but.
Shared Gooniverse.
As I cut you off, what's going on this week, Wes?
Shang-Chi. That's just about it. But I think. PCP podcast is doing Black Widow finally.
Really?
So look out for that. They're about 2 weeks away from becoming the Boxers Volume 2 podcast.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. No, I mean like 2 weeks release date. Like how they wait 2 weeks longer. I thought they were going to be defunct. No.
I thought that's what you meant to say. Okay.
Like format wise, they would become the Boxers podcast.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Caught me off guard when I saw Black Widow. So wait a minute. So serious, did you put that down as a joke, or are they actually doing Black Widow?
No, I put it down as a joke. I can't imagine they're doing Black Widow.
I mean, they did fucking Suicide Squad 2 weeks late, so I was like,
it's true. They still haven't done. I'm like much like we've done an episode of all of Goo's ideas for our episodes. Mm. I think PCP should do an episode of all the episode ideas that we've come up for them, particularly like the communist stuff.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, yes, yeah, so we definitely made it a little more, not risque is not the right word, but a little more provocative, I guess, our fake topics for them. Mm-hmm. But they should, they would make a great episode. I don't know. Why not? Just if you're struggling to find stuff, guys, we've had you covered for a while. All right. TLDR, as I mentioned, we're going to be talking about Why the Last Man ahead of the start of that series on FX. I'm very excited to talk about that this week. And then my one time in episode. What if we did a podcast about Marvel's What If? Would you listen? A Marvel What If podcast. What are you guys doing this week? Thank you.
We are on episode 5 of Marvel's What If, which will be What If Thor Came to Earth Still Worthy, I believe that's the title there.
Okay. All right.
So we'll see.
Okay. Yeah, I'm excited for it, but that does sound like one of the more odd ones.
I don't know. It feels weird that they're going backwards in the timeline again.
Yeah, that's the first. Yeah,
but I think the next week's episode 6, or the week after, I should say, is they go back to the Iron Man, Killmonger, Tony Stark, that whole thing, which I think has been teased about early. Killmonger saving Tony Stark from the original blast. So he never really becomes Iron Man.
Yeah, actually, yeah. How the hell is that going to work? That's cool. That's I forgot about that. Then we've got, I've heard it both ways. The Pineapple Boys, they actually didn't record last week, so they are still supposed to be doing season 3, episode 3 of Psych this week. Yes, I know. I know. And then, of course, you can follow Doc over on Twitch at Backcracker. And you can follow Shine and Davey as well over there. They're doing all their video game stuff. That's where you get all the video game stuff from the DSG. Wes, I haven't checked. What are we doing next week?
I don't know. I thought maybe we'd kind of ride this Marvel wave for a minute and do a rewatch vault.
I like that. Yes.
Homecoming.
I think.
Spider-Man Homecoming. Let's come home.
Yeah. Yeah, why not? Yeah, let's do the rest. Yeah, let's go for that.
Now, it's going to be a little difficult. Unless something else comes to mind, I'm just throwing it out
there. Oh, my God. But yeah,
it's going to be a little difficult to watch.
Yeah, I don't understand how it's not available anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to have to reconvene a little bit later in the week to make sure we were able to get our hands on this because I don't know where we can right now.
Yeah, I mean, you could probably rent it on Amazon Prime or something like that.
Oh, that's okay. I hope so. It's got to be somewhere. Yeah, nobody can have it anywhere. Yeah, because I mean, I don't even know where I would find, like, does Walmart have the DVDA? I don't know.
Oh, I don't even know if they still sell DVDs.
They do. Yes, that's the Blu-rays, whatever, I guess. That's not what it is technically. Yes, you're right. All right, so I know this time wasn't same bad time, same bad place. But what about next week?
But next week should be. I imagine so. Same bad time, same bad place, baby.